Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 4th of November, recording at 8:52 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the Big Picture Long-Term Outlook Audio for the various asset classes. But first, let's start with a quick review of the week. And it's mostly been a week of ranging. I mean, really, on Monday and Tuesday, we had a nosedive by stock markets. And that was, again, triggered by concern over developments in Europe, as you now know. But we didn't get a lot of follow-through, and the markets recovered much of those sharp reactions, which also occurred against the background of an overbought condition. But they bounced back a bit on Wednesday and Thursday, and also today in Asia, but they were a little bit weaker in Europe and North America. The European markets were a little bit weaker than Wall Street, with declines of 2% or more for France, Germany, and Italy. Those are the biggest decliners there. China sector in Asia continues to be quite steady. Long-dated government bond prices, they soared on Monday and Tuesday, as you'd expect, given the fear in the air, and then weakened before steadying a little bit again today. Still ending with a sort of a net bit gain on those bond prices. The U.S. dollar, similar action, rallied sharply on Monday and Tuesday before giving up not all of those gains, but a chunk of them. So just ranging generally. Precious metals, that was one of the better stories on the week, and they rose pretty steadily. And the today's a bit of an exception, where we've had a small decline. Gold trading after hours, 1755. And that's been generally a good week for the precious metals. Gold a little lower, 3411. Okay, so what's going on here? Well, crude oil, let me just mention that. Crude oil has been quite firm in here. We're up over 100 and I think $13. Let me just check that on the $112.25 on the Brent, $112.25. But that's quietly firm within its trading range, and the WTI is at 94.34. Okay, so what's going on here overall, and what are the implications? Well, obviously Europe remains the main focal point of attention. I guess this is understandable, but probably too much so in terms of its influence on investors, because let's face it, for most of the countries of the world, what's happening in Europe is not a hugely big deal. And okay, we could get contagion if we had a disorderly default in Greece, or if we had a Lehman moment in terms of the European banks, but those two risks do not seem all that great. So I actually think that the European situation is past the nadir of its risk. It doesn't mean that it's anywhere closer to being resolved overall in terms of dealing with all the debt problems, but they're at least working on containing the situation. We know that Europeans seem committed to maintaining the euro, and I think that's probably a good idea under the circumstances. We also see that they're moving very quickly when they need to address problems. The referendum that had been called by the Greek prime minister has been, Papandreou, has been cancelled. So that's removed that introduction of uncertainty that we had seen. And we've got the IMF playing an important role in helping out in this crisis. So my feeling is they're going to muddle through. And that, again, that won't remove the debts. We were talking about many years of that, and probably quite slow growth in the region generally. But if Europe just trundles along as a modest growth situation, and it's a little bit worse than that right now. We have a mild to a sharp recession, depending whether you were talking about the core countries, mild, or the periphery countries, where the recession is really quite sharp. But there are big question marks over where's the growth actually going to come from, aside from in Germany. But the point I'm trying to make is that if Europe loses a little more of its capacity to shock investors, and if it can do just well enough to sort of muddle through and get back to the quite modest growth rates that we were seeing before this crisis, that would be no bad thing. The rest of the world would be doing really quite well. Well, now enough about Europe here for now. What about the U.S.? The U.S. economy, the data has continued to surprise, with a small s, on the upside. A lot of people had felt that the U.S. economy was in recession or never really came out of recession. That's clearly not true. It's not surging ahead, but 2.5% GDP growth in the last quarter. That's, you know, there are a lot of people who would have settled for that and beforehand, and were mildly favorably surprised by that result. Again, the debt problem's enormous. Again, I think we'll see generally slow growth overall in North America, but it's not going to, the U.S. economy is not going to go into recession this year, and we'll have to wait and see what actually happens next year overall. But as this is a long-term outlook, the really big couple of trump cards that the U.S. does hold is the shale gas and the shale oil. And I've talked about that so much. But really, if we have an administration in the White House and Congress, or the balance of power in Congress, which is obsessed with promoting green energy and blocking the development of the shale oil and gas, along with additional conventional drilling offshore and in Alaska, then the U.S. will have more financial problems. On the other hand, if they actually encourage the shale gas and the shale oil and the offshore drilling and additional drilling in Alaska and elsewhere, the United States is going to be energy self-sufficient in a little over 10 years. And that would just be a huge game changer. I think it's already a game changer to the extent that we've seen quite a bit of development of natural gas and of shale gas rather. And the shale oil is considerably more important because the fuel is so much more expensive at this stage and likely to remain so. So the more of its own oil the U.S. can produce, the better, frankly, and the better for the rest of the world. And while I've described the last decade as a difficult decade, and this decade is a difficult decade for the globe generally, there are some strong, there's some obviously very strong regions against that background, Asia in particular, but the progressing growth economies generally are really doing quite well overall. And I think they will continue to do so. But as this shale oil and shale gas proliferates, I maintain that 12 to 15 years from now, we will see energy prices lower in real terms than they are today. By real terms, of course, I mean inflation-adjusted terms. So, we've got a few more years in this valuation contraction phase, difficult period with the debt problems, which are gradually being addressed. Gradual deleveraging, that's all really quite positive for the global economy in the long term, but not in the short term. And the obvious point is you can't go on, you can't resolve your debt problems by adding on ever more debt. And it has to be addressed. And that means slower GDP growth and higher unemployment. But eventually, you work through that, and we will, in the next, 5, 6, 7 years, depends how quickly it all happens, then the global economy is going to be in a much stronger position. Meanwhile, and this is a very big meanwhile, corporations are way outperforming. Corporations in the West, let's start with those, are way outperforming their home economies. And the ones that are doing best are the biggest companies. And the reason they're doing so well is first in 2008, that was a real wake-up call. So they went into survival mode. And, excuse me. Still got a scratchy throat here. Take a sip of water. So, from survival mode, they've strengthened their balance sheets. They've gone where the money is, which has largely been to these growth economies. And a statistic that I saw from a good report from Merrill Lynch a couple of months ago. It's 10 years ago, the S&P 500 companies derived 20% of their earnings from overseas countries, outside the US, in other words. In 2010, they derived 40%. I'm talking about the S&P 500 companies deriving 40% of their earnings from overseas. Now, my guess is that 10 years from now, they'll be deriving at least 60% of their earnings. And why shouldn't they? The United States has a population of 300 million. And a chunk of those people are receiving state assistance. We've seen a decline in real wages for many people over the last decade and more, more like the last 20 years or more. Whereas other regions of the globe are growing very, very rapidly. And we could say that roughly in a globe of 7 billion people, that perhaps 2 billion of those people qualify as, within their own countries at least, as in the middle class or very close to it. And in other words, they're consumers. So there are a heck of a lot more of them out there than there are sitting back in the United States. And these companies, these multinational companies, which I call autonomies, because they are quasi-autonomous, mobile, like mobile principalities. They don't own a great deal of land. All they really need in terms of land is the a few properties that they own in various countries, or rent mainly. But the key point is that they manufacture where they can do so most effectively, and they sell where they can get the best return. So they follow the money, and they're doing exceptionally well. And again, with strong balance sheets, increased dividends, they're not all that expensive. So I think we get too hung up on what's actually happening with the global economy. It's not that it's not a factor, but when you have the so-called old world, the developed economies, in this very slow growth phase to recession phase, and you have these much bigger population growth economies that are really the engine of global GDP growth, they're doing extremely well, and their people are consuming. And so these well-managed autonomies are moving into those regions and profiting. And you and I can profit by owning their shares. And they're not just American companies. Europe has a number of autonomies. The big miners, the big integrated oil companies, there are loads of them. Basically, any of the really successful multinational companies, and again, I repeat this point, many of them have high yields. The valuations aren't all that high. The valuations are actually downright attractive in some respects. So that's not a bad outlook by any means at what I maintain is a difficult decade here, the second consecutive difficult decade for the global economy, including this valuation contraction that we're seeing in the USA overall. Well, let's now go back nearer term and look at monetary policy, because of all the analysts and all the reports that I see, if I had to select just one indicator of what stock markets are going to do in future, I would say, let me see the trend of monetary policy. Now, if countries are cutting interest rates, easing monetary policy, then that's good for equities. And conversely, when countries are raising interest rates and tightening monetary policy, that tends to be bad for equities. And a missing catalyst in this current market environment that I talked about, and I said it was the most important one, the one that concerned me the most, was China. Well, towards the second half of last month, China clearly signaled that it was injecting funds, and so really starting to reverse its tight monetary policy. And I think it's wise to do so. I think it's anticipating. A lot of people have been talking about hard landings. When you have a strong growth economy like China, you get a hard landing if they squeeze for too hard for too long. And they've been doing this for a couple of years, really, to deflate that property market somewhat. And they've largely succeeded. So I think this is a very positive development. This suggests to me that Asia's growth is not going to contract much further before it starts expanding again. India will take longer. Maybe I'm worried that possibly India holds off for too long, but it shouldn't really. This isn't rocket science we're talking about. If you wait until inflation is tamed, you're probably going to be knocking on recession. If you wait until you're seeing signs of easing, then abating inflationary pressures, then you're far better off. If you start to ease up on the monetary policy tightening at that stage. And generally, there are more countries around that are lowering interest rates now than are raising interest rates. And most of the ones that are raising interest rates, other than India, which did so last week, but I think and hope, very much hope that that will be the last hike, although they don't know for sure at this stage. But other than India, the ones that are raising interest rates tend to be the so-called frontier markets. Kenya did, Vietnam did. They have weaker currencies and bigger inflation problems. But my general advice overall is steer clear of frontier markets until just about everything else is showing signs of overheating, and then they tend to get a late run. Okay. So, again, in terms of monetary policy, I think that's becoming a little bit more favorable again. We didn't get any tightening in the USA, and that's one reason why I think that Wall Street has shown relative strength recently. So the Wall Street leash is by no means bearish, and my hunch is that there's a better chance that we'll see another melt up rather than a melt down for these stock markets. And if we don't get that, I think we're more likely to get just mostly ranging sideways, which wouldn't be the end of the world. But I maintain that the cyclical bear is over for most of these stock markets, certainly on Wall Street. There's some encouraging signs that it may actually be ending on China. The bounce back in the ASEAN indices that so often lead has been very encouraging. A number of the bounces in Europe, troubled Europe, are encouraging because they had been discounting, people have been talking about Armageddon and a Lehman moment. So they're backing away from that, looking a little better. So that technical action is not so bad. The monetary policy is not so bad. The valuations are really quite reasonable. Sentiment, most people are extremely bearish. Every time I say something optimistic on these audios, I get a few emails coming in saying I'm too optimistic. They often don't say why, but that just indicates the way people feel generally. And I understand that. And the volatility has certainly worried a lot of people. And that's very easy to understand. Bottom line, I think we're more likely to get another melt up from here than a melt down. And if we don't get either, I think markets just be relatively steady within a range. But probably, I'd say better than 50% chance that we are back in a cyclical bull phase. Now that means that the long-dated government bond prices will probably weaken, the yields will probably push higher, but they're not going to all do the same thing around the globe. I think the U.S. long-dated yields are unsustainably low, but Bernanke is standing there determined to keep them from moving up very much, and he can do that for a while longer, and that also encourages the banks to play the yield curve for a while longer. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see that. So I'm not looking for a huge move necessarily. I actually think that some of the sovereign debt doesn't look that bad. Italian bonds, for instance, I've said that previously. If these countries aren't going to default on these bonds at some stage, they look quite attractive. Look at that Banque d'Italia. Don't take my word for it. Look at that Banque d'Italia report that I posted yesterday. That's Italy's central bank. It's impressive. And it's a long report, so just read pages 13, 14, and 15 if you're pressed for time. Now, What else in here? Precious metals. Precious metals, arguably, like low interest rates even more than stock markets. And my view, my long-term view on gold is, of course, that this is a secular bull market. I've been saying that really since 2001, 2002. And I certainly don't think that it's over. And my long-term view is that we'll probably end due to considerably higher short-term interest rates. Now, we were seeing higher interest rates in the growth economies, but the bigger demand for gold has still been coming from North America, Europe, but Asia is very, very important. If every country had moved their interest rates, if all the Western countries had moved their interest rates up as much as India, for instance, I think there could be quite a reasonable chance that the gold secular bull was over. But that's not the case. And China's rates are going to come down, and India's rates are going to come down in terms of the next big move, and the U.S. rates aren't going to go up, according to Mr. Bernanke. That's a good environment for gold. Silver is its high beta proxy. Silver doesn't lead the way following a big correction, but and gold has the best chart of the four futures traded precious metals. But the others will follow, and then eventually high beta silver, more often than not, then takes over in terms of relative performance relative to gold. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that overall. As the global economy strengthens, and there are question marks over 2012, particularly regarding the West, a lot will depend on what happens, how much the interest rates come down in the rest of the world. But if we see the Western economies trundling along at a above recession, plus Asian growth picking up in response, say once again, well, not just Asian growth, also it's growth basically throughout these developing, progressing economies. Then we're going to see commodity price inflation heat up again for sure. As far as the industrial commodities are concerned, over the next few years, because not everybody is producing their shale oil and their shale gas. The foods could also move up really quite easily. But that depends more on weather. Supply is the big variable. The weather is the big determinant in terms of supply, but you know demand's going up. So we can expect surprises to the upside more than surprises to the downside. And then, of course, you get a bit of collectoritis, and people want to participate in these commodities. And another gold run to the upside, which I think we're going to see. I think it'll be higher at the end of the year, and I think it'll be higher at the end of the first quarter still. That will encourage people to move more into commodities. So we get back into that commodity inflation cycle, and the time to start worrying again is when the Asian countries start tightening interest rates. The big Asian countries, China and India, start tightening interest rates again. I'm talking about several months down the road, at least, after those rates have come down somewhat. We'll have to watch out for that. We can't precisely predict when that's going to happen. But as long as we avoid a massive spike in as long as we avoid a massive spike in crude oil price, it shouldn't be too bad. Okay, what about those currencies? Well, the low interest rate Western currencies are not inherently strong. The dollar as a liquid, highly liquid currency, and it still does enjoy that safe haven status, but that support can melt away pretty quickly again. The long-term strong currencies are going to be those of the growth economies. And the very indebted economies and regions are going to have the softer currencies. So the euro, sterling, the US dollar, these are indebted currencies. And watch that Asian dollar index. I think that will lead, and I think the commodity currencies will have another run to the upside. And I think that's about it, folks. I've run on quite a long way, and I don't want to abuse you any further, so I'll just say have an absolutely fantastic weekend. You'll be relieved to hear that Owen gets back next week following another successful chart seminar. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.